Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my site softer?
Can I make my site firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side, your Sleep Number setting. Enjoy personalized comfort for better sleep night after night. And now, during our President's Day sale, take 50% off our limited edition bed, plus an extra $100 off all mattresses. End Saturday. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome to the Baseball Insiders Prospect Show. I am Adam Weinrib, joined as I am every Tuesday by FanSided MLB prospect guy, guru, what have you, depending on which Chiron you read, Eric Cole. And spring training is afoot. It's upon us. Players are gathered. Pitchers, catchers, other types of players. They're all there. And that includes prospects. And that includes you viewers of the Prospect Show, who I'm sure want to know what we're seeing early from a number of top prospects we have high expectations for. This will not be the Connor Griffin episode. We've got 7 more of those planned before opening day. I will be in Clearwater this Sunday to watch a Pirates split squad face the Phillies. Now, do the Pirates want to send Connor Griffin to my split squad? How split's the squad going to be? Let me know as soon as you... Maybe I'll even be able to get you Connor Griffin footage. Or maybe I'll just be stalking Hunter Barco around the back entrance. That's for me to know and you to find out. But before any of that happens, we have plenty more early prospect storylines that we are keeping an eye on. Eric's beloved Braves, something weird going on at Yankees camp with a bullpen savior or potential rotation addition. The Red Sox logjam, White Sox, and Juan Soto's must praise outfielder. I'm here to break it all down with me. Plus more is Eric Cole. Eric, welcome to the week.
I'm just glad that there's actual baseball news as opposed to kind of like having to actually like kind of pretend that there is and kind of put on our, you know, look into the future caps or whatever. So again, it's still early, but at the same time, like we're still seeing a lot of like very interesting sort of like injury updates, particularly matters a lot for this discussion. We're talking about prospects. And I just think that there's a lot of early camp movement that could result in. There's still a few guys out there that haven't been signed. That could very easily happen. But also, I think a lot of prospects maybe have a better chance of making their opening rosters than we initially thought.
Yeah, how about that? And again, the early narratives, the praise is very clear from people who are the players who were in positions of power as well. I want to start off, we're going to be talking about a couple of narratives that are seemingly developing early before the game has even gotten underway. I think the first game is, I know the Yankees start Friday, and I know who's starting that game on Friday, so we'll certainly mention his name before the end of the show, before too long. If you're just joining us for the first time, the Prospect Show every Tuesday, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, the Baseball Insiders with me, Adam Weinrib, and Robert Murray, FanSided's MLB Insider. You could bother us both in the Discord if you have not joined yet. Please join at the All-Star tier so you can participate in the private Q&A on Thursdays at 3 p.m. Eastern. Baseball Insiders goes live on Monday and Wednesday, so you can bombard us with your questions there as well. But All-Stars get priority access to the question portion of the show. Also, head over to fansided.com/newsletters to subscribe to the Baseball Insiders newsletter. Eric, me, Robert, all of us directly to your inbox twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays, and all that and more on the Baseball Insiders feed on fansided.com/baseball-insiders. And when you get all of us in one place, we're probably going to talk about our favorite teams. That means Eric is probably going to talk about the Atlanta Braves. And hey, a little bit of column A, column B stuff going on at Braves camp right now. It's a different pitcher who you love is injured every day, but opportunities are opening up for other pitchers who you also love. And so to head to Atlanta first, and let's get this in before Lucas Giolito. I don't know if the Braves are going to sign Lucas Giolito. I don't know if the Braves are going to sign Zach Littell. I don't know if they're going to fill this void externally or internally. But internally, Spencer Schwellenbach goes down, Hurston Waldrop goes down. J.R. Richie is a guy who we talked about a lot on the show. It already felt like he had a chance to swipe a rotation spot before the Waldrop news, before things got even thinner. Schwellenbach going to be on the shelf a while. He is in competition ostensibly with like the Grant Holmes of the world and Ronaldo Lopez throwing like 91, maybe even less than that. It's been an odd start. Like, you never want to flash your full velocity early in camp if you're not quite ready. But I'm not sure what's going on in Atlanta, and I do feel like Richie has the inside track, potentially the number 5 or number 4 starter role in Atlanta already after just a couple of days of gathering. Does that feel fair? And what expectations are you comfortable placing on his shoulders?
I think it's fair. He certainly had a chance beforehand, but the Braves had sent messages, like kind of signals out for a while that they really want to preserve depth. And that means if they're going to carry guys who might be a little bit worse that don't have minor league options, and then putting the guys who do have minor league options in the inner minor leagues, they were willing to do that. And that was actually a reason why Waldrip had a very it seemed likely in the moment that Waldrip wasn't going to make the opening day last year, let alone J.R. Richie. Waldrip, who like put together a really good second half last year, was a strong rookie performer, but there was a good chance that if everyone was healthy, he wasn't going to make the opening day roster at all. So, but you have Schwalbach go down, you're like, okay, they can't be too picky in terms of minor league options. They're just going to have to go with Waldrip, and that's fine. But then Waldrip gets hurt, and we don't know exactly how hurt he is. It could be anywhere from, hey, there's some loose bodies, but just rest it for a few weeks and then you'll be fine, to we need to cut into you, and that, depending on what the damage is, can be a much longer absence. So, but at the moment, I do think that J.R. Richie has a better chance, a much better chance. I don't think that they have a lot of internal options left. The external options are a little bit dicey. I mean, again, you have Zach Lytle, you have Lucas Giolito, but like, if the Braves really want to sign those guys, why haven't they signed them yet? Like, they already wanted starting pitching depth before those two guys got hurt. Now, maybe there's a little bit more urgency, and maybe they'll be a little less picky now. But ultimately, I don't think they're going to make enough moves to where G.R. Richie isn't going to be in the thick of things. Now, Reynaldo Lopez and Grant Holmes, we got to see how healthy they are. Holmes looks pretty good. Lopez, we just don't know, like, how was he going max effort? Is there, you know, like, how much if he's only throwing 91, you can't have him in the rotation. You just can't, because his stuff isn't good enough if it's not power stuff. But in the case of J.R. Richie, maybe Owen Murphy as well. There's a couple other guys, you know, Blake Burkhalter is another name that might, you know, force his way into a conversation. They have in some internal options, but they're not perfect fits. So I'm not completely convinced that they're not going to like try to subvert this podcast immediately and sign an arm like 5 minutes before it comes out. You know, go ahead and that was my bad. I cursed it, but it's a tough situation overall. But I do think the Braves have some pieces on the prospect side that could be helpful.
What do you think is the year one ceiling on Richie? Because I don't know. I know he's ready, personally. Like, I know he believes that he is ready to contribute. What do you feel like he could give you year one?
I think I never want to project more than, like, a number four or number five starter on a guy until I see how big leaders are, like, taking his stuff and reacting to it. At the end of the day, I just don't. I don't know how big leaders are going to respond to his stuff. I think he could start off really strong. He has kind of a repertoire where he's going to be kind of hard to pin down early. But once teams have a second or a third look at him, I'd be a little bit more kind of concerned as to kind of how things are going to go, or at least skeptical, because rookie pitchers very often are not very good. So I think that his ceiling is probably a number four or number five starter, at least early on. But I'm completely willing to change that prediction once we kind of see how it looks.
Yeah, don't expect every rookie starter. I mean, look at the Mets last year. Noel McClain is zoomed up top prospect list for good reason, because he showed out in his limited sample. Jonah Tong did not. Brandon Sproat is a Brewer now, also did not. So it's not easy to be a rookie pitcher, which brings me to another rookie pitcher, of course. This is not going to be the last time I ask you about Carlos Lagrande, who has been the talk of Yankees camp. For good reason. It's not off. It's so funny. I mean, when you live in the prospect space like we do, you are well aware of these people and their special talents and gifts, but you forget what it is like for somebody to, for a whole metric ton of Yankee fans to encounter prospects with unique tools at the same time. And here he is, and he's in bullpen sessions throwing 101, 102 already. And every single outlet writes the same story at the same time about how he could be the bullpen solution that Yankee fans are overlooking, even though he is a starting pitcher in the minors. And if you've got stuff like this, then you should be a starter for as long as you can be a starter until you can't be anymore. And so here he is at camp. He's got the showcase start. He's starting the Yankees opener on Friday against the Orioles, and he's in live BP against Aaron Judge. Yesterday, he throws 99 Judge homers off it, knowing that all eyes are on him. It circles back to him and Judge a second time. He cranks it up to 102.6, dotted on the lower inner half, to strike out the captain. And then Aaron Judge comments on it, and then Aaron Boone comments on it. So he could be the story of camp, especially given the Yankees bullpen, which David Bednar, we know what we're getting by and large. Camilo Doval, we don't know what we're getting. They think they fixed him, but there's your eighth inning and ninth inning guy if everything works. And after that, we've got Fernando Cruz as the fireman, and we've got seven additional question marks. So yeah, right? Like, it's tempting to throw this fella into the bullpen, but then all of a sudden, you may lose a starter. Even if you don't think you're losing a starter, you may lose a starter. Jabba Chamberlain, Phil Hughes in 2009. He goes back. Everybody goes back and forth. The Michael Scott snip, snap, snip, snap. It's hard to put the toothpaste back in the tube. After you've seen Legrande dominate as a reliever, you really going to want to take him out and put him back in the rotation? The decision makers have had this problem over and over again, and repeatedly they choose to just stick with what's working. And I understand that temptation. But then you might lose yourself an all-time starter with all-time stuff if they can harness the command. What are your feelings vis-a-vis rotation, bullpen, long-term and short-term for this guy with an obviously absurd arsenal, but with severe command issues?
I agree with you in theory, and the Braves have a guy who's kind of similar to this, that when you have a guy who's throwing 100 plus with like kind of wicked stuff, you don't want to move them off starting pitching unless, again, they just literally can't do the job, because starters like that are very, very rare, and having that kind of superpower stuff is a big deal. Now, in the case of Legrande, there's a prospect that's somewhat similar in Giancarlos Lara for the Braves. Power arm, and you want to give that power arm a chance to succeed, but he has a long history of command issues, and it just kind of gets to the point where it feels like you're trying to put a square peg into a round hole with a guy like that. I think that ultimately when a guy doesn't have great command but has big time power stuff, and if you let him go and lose in shorter outings, his stuff might play up even more and his command might be a little bit better because he can kind of dial it in for, you know, 15, 20 pitches or whatever. I'd be very tempted to try him out in the bullpen. Now, does that close a door later on? It's fair. It's a fair question to wonder. We've seen it happen where like guys like came up and they're like, hey, we're going to start him off in the bullpen, and then they just kind of settled into that role and they just never left it. But then you have situations where like Adam Wainwright starts his career as a closer, and then he becomes one of the better starting pitchers in Cardinals history, right? So there are multiple schools of thought. I am hopeful that he gets at least some real chance to start in camp. Maybe like see what he looks like after three innings. And if it's clear in the third inning that he just is gassed and he cannot command the pitches anymore, that kind of gives you your answers to kind of what kind of guy he is. But I like the arm talent a lot, but it's just it's a tough profile to make as a starting pitcher. If you make it, you're like a stud, but it's like one out of 20 guys who have this kind of stuff that end up staying in this rotation.
Yeah. And bottom line, what they need this year is the bullpen help. Like what they need this year, they have rotation options down to Will Warren and down past him, you know, Will Warren, Luis Gil, Ryan Yarbrough, Paul Blackburn, Ben Hess, Brendan Beck. Like, you've got other guys even at the double A and triple A level. Bryce Cunningham, you're probably not going to go that deep, but you've got other guys you could turn to before you turn to Legrande in the rotation. You've got like 9 or 10 of them, but you do not have arms in your system that could theoretically hold down the eighth inning in a pennant race. And he showed them something special yesterday when he recovered and returned to Aaron Judge and said, all right, so you got my 99. Here's 102.5, and here's where it's going to be. And you are Aaron Judge, and you can't hit this. So tip of the cap from both sides. I think respect from both sides. And look, if the Yankees need a bullpen arm and he's flourishing, I don't think they would hesitate to pluck him from the high minors, utilize him, and then, you know, raise new questions and answer them next year. But that's next year's problem. And will next year happen? I don't know. Tony Clark doesn't have a say in that anymore. So who knows? A vacancy has been created at Red Sox camp as well, temporarily. Roman Anthony is, of course, going to be their centerpiece this year, but he was selected for Team USA late in the World Baseball Classic process in Corbin Carroll's place. That has led to a lot of, if Masa Yoshida questions weren't already loud, now everyone's like, we have an outfit. We had an outfit logjam before. The logjam is even worse, you know, once Roman Anthony comes back. He's going to get a chance to showcase himself for a couple of weeks, presumably, but he's going to the WBC as well. So when the World Baseball Classic is over and Roman Anthony and Yoshida are returning, is Yoshida still a Red Sox? Chris Cotillo explained this week it may take the Red Sox attaching a top five prospect to get Yoshida off the roster, even though we know Yoshida is a talented hitter, talented DH. If you're the Red Sox, do you do that? If you are running the Red Sox, Eric Cole, who is the best prospect you include to get Yoshida off the roster? Or do you just eat the full contract and bite the bullet and you know, okay, you wanted a top five. Well, how about we eat all the money and it's top 20 now? Goodbye.
I just don't understand. Like, usually when you have to like attach a prospect to a deal like this, it's kind of like a Bronson Arroyo not pitching $20 million a year type of deal versus Yoshida, who can hit just fine. And there are
every
teams that
time
would love
he's used, every time he's used, he can hit just fine.
I mean, defensively, are there questions? Sure. But at the same time, there are like half a dozen teams in baseball that would just love to have a guy who could make contact with a baseball. You know what I mean? And Yoshida's good at that. So I don't understand why there's like his contract is like purely surplus value that you have to make up for by adding a prospect to, right? You know what I mean? Like the Braves did a deal like this once where they attached Tuki Toussaint to Bronson Arroyo to like kind of basically buy a prospect. And I think those deals can make sense. But in the case of the Red Sox, they have other assets they can move. That like Yoshida would save them some money, but like there's no indication that they have anywhere to spend that money that they want to. If you make this move, you probably make it earlier in the offseason. You don't just like, okay, well, we don't have to pay them and we're not going to spend the money either. I mean, that might be like the Stan Kennedy, you know, villain arc, but at the same time, I just don't see that as likely. I think that there would be some demand for Yoshida out there. I don't think you need to attach a top five prospect. I'm not even sure I would attach a top 10 prospect.
I don't think I would either, and I think every Red Sox fan who has watched Yoshida play knows that the bat talent is pretty undisputed. He carried their offense in the postseason series at Yankee Stadium last year, as did Nick Sogard and the like, unexpected sources. But Yoshida, if what you need is bat on ball, if you need a hard hit line drive single, he's your man. The defense doesn't work, imperfect roster fit for the Red Sox, to say the least, but a good player. Surprising they were unable to clear him, and surprising it has come to this point. Now, I want your early thoughts on another Japanese star who is making his very first appearance stateside. And that's Munetaka Murakami at White Sox camp. We have seen the offense. We have seen the power show early. Hard to dispute that. We've also seen somewhat limited range at third base. I've had to remind myself multiple times that third base might be his ultimate landing spot in Chicago. They've already got the double catchers. They've got Kyle Tierrell and Edgar Caro. One goes to first, maybe. One goes to DH, probably. I guess that's why the Red Sox were flirting with trying to get Teal this offseason, because there's a logjam, and the logjam is made a little wonkier by Murakami. But so far, the bat in BP is as advertised. Game action, I need to see it. And the defense, I'm confused by the defense, but I'm curious your thoughts here.
I don't think anyone had any doubts that Murakami could put on a show in batting practice, right?
Exactly.
Like we knew that was going to be the case, which is why I don't like get too hung up on backfield work, like off workouts and, you know, the guys in the cage and stuff like that. But I will say it's nice to see that he's shown some power. I don't think that his defense is even like where his appeal is. It comes down to whether or not he's going to make enough contact for his power to matter. And we're going to find that out pretty quickly, because pitchers are generally ahead of hitters, and he's going to get plenty of playing time early. And if he's like 0-for-12 with 10 strikeouts after the first week, the White Sox may have made a mistake in giving him the deal that they did. But I think he'll be fine. I don't think he's going to be super exciting. I think he's going to have like a game here and there where he's going to hit a ball where like, how did he even hit the ball there? But I think there's going to be a lot of games where he's like really infuriating young hitter who maybe he's a little bit too aggressive on breaking stuff for his own good.
Yeah, and nobody is maybe better suited to a BP power show than this guy. Now the real fun starts. Now Carlos Lagrange is already at 102.6, and where are you? So the pitchers are ahead of the hitters. Some of the pitchers are doing, honestly, worrisome velocity jumps that they should be holding back for another couple of weeks, if not a month. But we will see what happens when the Cactus League action begins in earnest, and we are only a few days away from that. One more narrative that sort of sprung up this weekend when Juan Soto arrived at Mets camp. We have talked a lot about Carson Benj as a potential starter for the New York Mets this year, especially as their outfield has been somewhat thin, and we don't know how much Luis Robert Jr. you're going to get, even if you're trading for Luis Robert Jr. We don't know, you know, you can pencil him in as much as you want to, but we're not certain how long he will last in that role. They made run prevention a priority, or so David Stern said. It's really hard, as I've debated multiple times on Twitter in recent weeks, it is really hard to overhaul your team defense in just one offseason. But in my opinion, it's not that hard to just not play people out of position while you're trying to do it. You've got players out of position all across that diamond, and many of their offseason additions were like, okay, we don't want Pete Alonso, but what do we want? There's no way they set out into the offseason waters with a whiteboard that said Jorge Polanco at first base. There's just no way. So they are you know, they've got marginal upgrades. They are banking on these guys being marginal upgrades, like Polanco being better than Pete Alonso, and just saying, okay, better than Pete Alonso is good enough for us. But that is not remaking your roster in terms of run prevention, in my opinion. And so that leads us to Bench, who is one of the very few real upgrade opportunities the Mets have in terms of team defense. If you install him, if the bat plays, then you have genuinely upgraded your defense rather than just saying, well, this new guy's better than really bad. Juan Soto commented on him, called him a big-time prospect at Mets camp this weekend, unprompted when he arrived. But he also added, hitting-wise, I haven't heard much about him. It's a little bit of an oof, but it is also underscoring that run prevention thing. If that's your thesis, and Soto is basically saying, I heard he's a good bat, but I don't really know much about him, but I know he can defend, that's sort of telling. So thoughts on how soon he'll be finding out more about him as an offensive player? Does he get a real shot to make the roster out of spring training?
I think he'll get a real shot, but I think he'll have to show something early, because if he's showing something at the plate early, that kind of puts him on a path to being an actual upgrade. If like he shows up and he's hitting 150 in camp, how can you justify, even if he's better in the second half of camp, it's a lot harder to justify putting a kid on the big league roster that way. He is an upgrade defensively. He has a skill set that is a little odd for me too, though, in that all around guys who like have a pretty good hit tool, who have some pop and have some speed, I've often found that the upside is often lacking, and like one of those things ends up not playing, which is kind of unfortunate, right? Because then all of a sudden you have a guy who's like only kind of okay, and maybe he's like, you know, a one or a two war player, which you probably would have expected more from a hot line prospect. But in the case of Benj, I think that he's going to get an earnest look in camp, and I think that the Mets are open to it, but I also don't think they're going to bank on it. And if he's like really struggling early, I wouldn't be shocked at all if he's shuffled off the minor league camp early. And it's like, look, you just go get ready. When you're ready, we'll call you up. But it's not right now.
Yeah, that is something I am prominently keeping an eye on. Again, how if he struggles, how long do the Mets let him struggle? And like you said, probably not very long, given his importance to the roster. The way it's currently constructed, he is crucial. Everybody keep your eyes on spring training. Weigh in. Join the Discord. Let us know what you want us to talk about as you're watching these position battles develop, as you're watching prospects get a chance, as you're waiting for Legrande versus Judge Round 3. When he pops out a, I don't know, 106 mile an hour fastball or something else crazy he has in his arsenal, Judge uses a 6-inch longer bat to get the head out around. I don't know what's coming. All I know is that spring training is officially upon us. These will continue to develop as the weeks come. And depending on how long these guys get, how long their leash is, we should see some pretty exciting stuff before some hard decisions are made. For Cole, I'm Adam Weinerb. Take care, everybody, and we'll see you next week.